Thanks tuned to Yesterday broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host Mark Livonier. In this hour, science fiction. Later on, with a story from Isaac Asimov on X-1. But first, an episode of a relatively short-lived series on ABC called Captain Star of Space. This first broadcast in 1953.
With Captain Star, ace adventurer of space, thrilling transcribed adventures in outer space and strange and far-off worlds where mystery, intrigue, and danger ride on every space fleet mission with
Star of Space! Hey, 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 hey.
Nova City Space Station calling Captain Star. Nova City Space Station calling Captain Star. Report for a special space mission.
Ranger Star reporting, Commodore Bradford.
You're blasting for Mars rock immediately. The Earth people in Polar City are fear-stricken, and they're threatening to leave. Over 15 of their leading citizens have disappeared in the last few weeks without any explanation.
What's my assignment, sir?
Investigate the mysterious disappearance. Find out who or what is behind them. Stop them.
Shooting Star to Spaceport, Nova City, Earth.
Spaceport, Nova City. Go ahead, Shooting Star.
Blasting on priority assignment, SR-1. Destination, Polar City, Mars.
Ranger Star, commanding.
Gail Archer.
That's on Anderson, crew.
Stand by.
Okay, Rock. She's all yours.
Mile building up. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Really?
Received word from Nova City Earth that Ranger Star of the Space Rangers will arrive here tomorrow to help us.
What are we doing in the meantime? Captain Stedman, wait for someone to kill us?
The local authorities, please, the local authorities are doing all they can.
And I'm for selling out and leaving this part of Mars.
If you all calm down for one moment, please, let's at least give this ranger our support. If he can't find out anything, then I'll be the first to lead you out of Polar City.
Captain Stedman!
Tommy, what is it?
My uncle! Uncle Bob!
What's happened?
Uncle Bob is gone!
Shooting Star to Polar City, Mars Spaceport. We're in an established orbit waiting for assignment of landing birds.
Robert Kane's disappearance brought the total of missing persons up to 16 among the Earth colony. And they've all disappeared without any logical explanation.
I see.
But how can people disappear in thin air, Captain Stedman?
I wish I could answer that, Flaps.
I understand that Tommy was with his uncle when he disappeared.
According to Tommy, yes.
Is there any reason to doubt him?
You know how young children are. They have vivid imaginations.
Yes. But Tommy was very broken up over his uncle's disappearance, wasn't he?
I can understand why. Tommy's parents were killed by the Martians when the Earth people settled here. His uncle adopted him. Have you seen Tommy yet?
No. Gail Archer, medical supervisor, member of our crew, is with him right now. We thought she could break the tension better.
All I can suggest is that you listen to his story and draw your own conclusions.
Oh, we intend to.
Fantastic as it may sound, it could be true, I suppose.
Most of the Earthmen here are farmers, aren't they?
Yes. Polar City, as you know, is noted for its excellent farming area. This section being close to the polar cap makes it a perfect climate, not to mention the fact it provides us with the best land on the planet.
Then it would be possible that the belt around the polar area could eventually make Earthmen on Mars self-sustaining, as far as the food supply goes.
Well, yes, eventually, but I don't see...
What do you mean, Rock?
Well, whoever controlled the food supply on Mars could control the people. Is that correct, Captain Stedman?
I never thought of it, but yes, I guess you're right.
Then someone or something is trying to scare the Earth people away from Polar City so they can take over the land.
That's ridiculous.
No, a hungry man will do anything for food, for his body, soul, or mind, Captain Stedman. Even kill.
That is more medicine, is it, Miss Archer?
No, this is something you'll really like, Tommy, here. Go ahead. I promise you'll like it.
What is it?
Well, a special drink that all boys and girls like on Earth. It's a vitamin malt. Go ahead.
Mmm, Mmm, it is good. Thanks a lot.
I'm glad you like it.
Tell me something about Ranger Stark.
Oh, you like him. He's a space ranger, and, well, he's big and handsome and has a cute smile and a twinkle in his eyes.
You like Rocky, don't you?
Now, listen, young man, you're getting very personal.
But you do like him, don't you?
Well, certainly. I've been a member of his crew since the Space Fleet days.
No, I mean, you really like him.
Well, he is very nice, but, now, listen, I think that you said...
How's the patient, Gil?
Oh, he's just fine, Rocky. Boy, am I glad to see you.
Oh?
I was just asking her if you like...
Tommy wanted to know when you were going to get here. Tommy, this is Ranger Star.
Rocky to you, Tommy.
Hi, Rocky.
Tommy's been asking a lot of questions.
Well, that's the only way you'll ever learn, Tommy. Ask questions. And that's why I want to ask you some questions. I want to learn something.
All right, sir.
Well, the day that you were out with your Uncle Bob, tell me what happened.
We went out to look over the land. Uncle Bob did that about once every 6 Earth months. Well, we were skipping some rocks along the water in the stream, and all of a sudden Uncle Bob stopped and started walking away.
Mm-hmm. What did you do?
I followed him and kept asking him where he was going, but he wouldn't tell me.
Well, what did he do?
He hit me and knocked me down. I was so scared I ran back into town.
Uncle Bob was nice to you, wasn't he, Tommy?
Always.
Well, then, don't blame him for what happened. He probably wasn't himself.
Sounds like he was under some sort of hypnotic spell.
Well, where'd he go? Why'd he leave me?
That's what we're trying to find out, Tommy.
Oh, Rock, Stepman wants you on the visit wave.
Well, I'll be right back, Tommy.
I'll go with you.
What is it, Flash?
Well, Stepman wouldn't tell me. He just said it was urgent.
What kind of a boy does Tommy strike you as being, Gail?
Oh, a very normal boy, Rocky. Why?
I just wondered. That was my impression, too.
Did Tommy help any?
Some. A mental control is being exerted over the missing person. Exactly what, I don't know.
Here's a visit wave.
Ranger Star.
Stepman here, Ranger Star. Better get over to my place at once. Avon Brickner, one of the missing persons, just walked into my office.
No, he walked in as if he'd never been missing. I asked him where he'd been. He just laughed.
Did he say anything else?
Claimed he's been up in the hills looking over his land and that there was no need for alarm. He got up to leave and then just passed out on the floor.
I sent Gail over to the hospital to talk to the doctor. Flaps is out at Brickner's home, standing guard.
Why do you need a guard? Excuse me.
Yes, Captain.
Captain Stedman.
This is Gail Archer. Tell Rocky that I've talked to Dr. Carson, that I'll meet him at the Brickner's home.
Just to look at him, Rocky, I'd say that he'd battled something both mentally and physically.
Yeah, the hollows in his face are deep, but that could be from lack of food.
Well, the doctor checked him over, but couldn't find anything physically wrong. A case of shock is all he could call it.
Did he find anything unusual on his person?
Yes, here. In the palm of Brickner's hand.
Looks like a burn.
Well, that's what we thought at first, but it's more like a mark, a birthmark, a discoloration of the skin.
That's odd. Burn looks like a diamond. It's almost a perfect shape.
Well, what do you think it is?
I don't know. Did you check with his wife to see if it could have been a birthmark?
Mrs. Brickner was sent to bed by Dr. Carson. She was in a very nervous state.
Well, nothing we can do here. Come on.
Find anything?
Maybe. I'm staying here with you, Flaps, to stand guard. Gail will go back to Tommy's place.
You expect something to happen here, Rocky?
Avon Brickner's return seems more than just a coincidence. He disappeared once. It could happen again.
What do you expect to find in a clothes closet?
Clothes?
Oh, I know that, I know that. But why can't you look for them in the daytime instead of night?
Mm. Here we are.
Huh? Well, they look like they've been in a cosmic storm.
Brickner was wearing them when he walked into Stedman's office today.
Oh. What?
Jacket and trousers are stiff. Seems like they've been in some sort of liquid.
Water?
Well, it hasn't rained here in over an Earth week, and his boots are watermarked.
Well, what about the stream that Tommy told you about?
Well, it doesn't seem to be...
Hey, Rock. Somebody's at the window.
Get your flash beam out. When I signal, turn it on.
What is it?
Shh, quiet, Flint. Hey, look. It's walking over to Brickner's bed.
It looks like it's going to...
Turn on your flash beam, quick.
Yeah, we get...
Don't blast, Flaps.
Oh, but he's getting away.
We don't want to kill intelligent life unless we have to.
But what was it?
Well, it looked like a small-sized version of a Martian. We won't say anything about this, Fletch.
I'd just soon forget about it. Just hope we don't meet up with another one.
We'll probably meet up with quite a few of them before this assignment is over.
But going into that country is dangerous, Ranger Starr.
Somewhere in the hills, there must be an answer to the mysterious disappearance of the Earthians here in the Polar City.
If you've made up your mind, I guess I'll go with you.
Oh, this is something that Flats and myself will handle alone.
Very well, if that's the way you want it.
Well, Tommy, glad to see you up and around.
He insisted on coming down to see you.
Mr. Archer said that you were going to look for my uncle.
That's right, Tommy.
I want to go, Rocky. Please let me.
Well, I'd like to, but... Well, it might be dangerous. And it isn't exactly the kind of a job for a young man like yourself to be doing.
But maybe I can help find Uncle Bob and the other missing people.
Oh, I'll bet you could. But you'll have to let Flaps and me go on this trip alone.
They won't let me go, Tommy.
Yeah, that's right.
If I were a space ranger, I'd let me go along.
I'll tell you what, Tommy. When you do grow up, I'll help you become a space ranger.
You mean it, Rock? Honest?
Honest. But to be a good space ranger, you have to make good marks in school and pass all your tests.
Then we'd better run along, young man, and study.
All right. But if you need any help, Rocky, you can count on me.
Oh, I know we can.
Be careful, Rocky.
Oh, if anything should happen and you need us, use your communicator. Flaps and I will have ours.
I will. Come on, Tommy.
Goodbye, Rocky.
Flaps. Goodbye, Tommy.
Your equipment's loaded on the sand sled. You'll be able to use the sled until you reach the foot of the hills. Then you'll have to walk.
Thanks, Captain Stedman.
You sure you won't change your mind about me coming along with you?
You'll be more help here, keeping the Earthians happy. That's a big job in itself.
Very well. Good luck to both of you.
Flaps and I rode the sand sled as far as we could into the hills, then strapped the gear on our backs and started walking. It was wild country, just as Stedman said it was, and the going through the tangled undergrowth was slow. By night, we were only halfway up the hill, so we camped by a small stream. Having been faced with eating Flaps' cooking before, I came prepared. I brought along some highly concentrated food tablets, and while he was insulted, my stomach was very happy. Before bedding down, we lit a small campfire to keep away curious Martian desert cats, and then turned in for a night's rest.
What's going on?
We have a visitor. Over in the bushes.
Huh?
Get your blaster. Go around one side, I'll go around the other. Now be careful. Come on out or I'll blast. I'll count up to three, then start blasting. One, two.
Don't blast, Rocky. It's me.
Hold it, Flaps. Hold it.
I know I broke my promise, Rocky, but I just had to come along.
How did you get here?
I hid in the back of your sand sled.
Well, why didn't we see you?
When you stopped, I climbed out and then followed along behind.
Jumping Jupiter. Tommy.
Hello, Ranger Flap.
Hi, kid.
Do I have to go back, Rocky?
Well, you can't go back tonight.
Oh.
We'll contact Gale on the communicator the first thing in the morning, and then we'll see if you can stay or not. And right now, say your prayers and get some sleep.
Bother you this late at night, but I have some information that must get to Rock as soon as possible.
Well, Rocky and Flaps are gone, Commodore, but I'll get a message to them. What is it?
Space Investigation Department just gave us a report on Captain Stedman.
What about Stedman?
He's really a space criminal known as Lance Whitman. Used to be a scientist, but was discharged from the scientific labs here in Nova City because of...
Commodore Bradford!
You'll find that your communicator doesn't work, Miss Archer.
Captain Stedman.
Yes. I came over to report that Tommy is missing.
Tommy missing?
I thought perhaps you might know where he was.
Why, no,
I've been outside for some time. I heard your conversation with Commodore Bradford.
Oh, what are you going to do?
I have no choice now.
How do you feel after a good breakfast, Tommy?
Fine, Rocky.
Yeah. Nothing like a good breakfast to give you a good start in the day. You'll remember that.
I will.
I don't understand it, Rock.
Understand what, Flash?
Well, my communicator doesn't work. Tried everything.
Well, then use mine.
I did. It doesn't work either.
Well, they were both checked before we left Stedman.
Yeah, well, whoever checked them to be sure they wouldn't work.
Flaps took one of the communicators apart and found a microtube missing. Now we were out of communication with Gale and had no way of knowing what was going on in Polar City.
Get the gear together, Flaps. We're going back to Polar City now.
Right.
Rocky! Rocky, help!
I spun around fast in the direction of Tommy's frantic voice and started running to help him. Down by the edge of the stream, I saw one of the funny Martian men Flaps and I had seen before. He had Tommy in his arms. I grabbed him and spun him around. He might have been small, but he was fast and strong. I was on the ground now with the Martian on top of me. His hands were around my throat, and I was struggling to break his grip.
Hey, what in the universe happened?
He grabbed Tommy and was running away.
Well, that's the same kind of creature we saw at Bridger's house.
Yeah, I told you. We'd be seeing a lot more.
Well, where's Tommy?
He was just here a few seconds ago.
He's not here now.
Tommy! Tommy!
There he is, Rock. Look, he's just walking down the middle of the stream.
Tommy! Just a minute!
Great thing in the universe. Look at him. He's way out of this world.
Don't touch him, Flaps.
Well, shouldn't we do something?
Tommy's all right, I'm sure, but in some sort of a trance.
Oh, what's he holding in his hand?
Looks like a necklace or a charm. Hey, I remember now. That native had something around his neck. I was on the ground, and suddenly I felt weak, and that's it, Flaps. The necklace had a purple ornament on it. That's the piece that hypnotizes victims, and through it, a mental power controls them.
Well, what do we do about Tommy?
Follow him.
Still walking down the middle of the stream. Can't we do something to break the hypnotic spell?
I don't know what effect it might have on him. The mental force is leading him someplace. We'll have a better chance if we can find out exactly what the control is. Then, once it's broken forever.
Hey, look, Rock.
Hmm?
You're walking out of the stream now.
And toward that big jagged rock over there.
But there's nothing there.
As far as we know now. Let's move a little faster so we can catch up with him, and then we'll stay right behind him. Tommy walked closer and closer toward the rock. We moved up close behind him so that we could protect him against any danger. When he reached the rock, he stopped, and suddenly the rock separated and swung open.
Jumping Jupiter. It's opening up.
We're going to follow him in. Now, act just the way he does, in a trance. And whoever's behind the rock slab will think we're one of the captives.
Yeah, you hope.
I'm hoping real hard. Now we found ourselves in a huge cave. The rock slab swung shut. We followed Tommy down the cave that was lit with purple torches on each side. Ahead of us, there was a big open area with 20 or more of the native Martians, like the one we had fought with earlier, standing around a large open pool. Tommy walked right into their midst and stopped.
What do you make of it, Doc?
Looks like some sort of ancient sacrifice ritual.
Well, they're all just standing around the pool. Why don't they do something?
Well, maybe they...
You are now facing the pool of life, Tommy Kane. And you will soon be one of us.
Me and that big man.
Don't ask any questions now, Flaps. Just do what I say. Get your blaster ready. When I holler, stop running toward that pool and firing into it.
I don't understand.
I'll explain later. We haven't much time. Now wait here until I holler for you.
Right.
Whoever you are, don't try to stop me from taking this boy out of here. If you do, I'll blast your pool of life into eternity. I've been expecting you, Ranger Star. Welcome. You heard me. I'm taking this boy out of here. I say you won't. I don't think you will at all. Look up there.
Hey, Rock. Rock, it's here. Look. She just walked out on that ledge up there.
No matter what happens, just do as I told you to.
The minute you start blasting into the pool, Ranger Star, Miss Archer will walk to the edge of the cliff and fall into it.
All right. What do you want us to do?
Up on that ledge. You'll find some diamond-shaped rocks. Listen carefully, Star. Diamond-shaped rocks. Pick one of them up and take it to Miss Archer.
Very well.
In just a few moments, Ranger Star, you will become one of us. Yes, one of us, Ranger Star, as your friends have. And my plans will become that much easier.
What?
Let's go, Flaps, before the plane sinks! Go! 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 Go!
are deeply indebted to you, Ranger Starr.
We sure are, Rocky. Thanks an awful lot for saving my Uncle Bob.
Remember what I told you, Tommy. Study real hard, and when you grow up, I'll see to it that you're a space ranger. That'll be repayment enough for me.
A shooting star ready to blast, Rock.
Okay, we're coming. Come on, Gail.
Goodbye, Tommy. Accomplished, Rocky?
Yes, but with a very narrow escape.
You know, all I want to know is what was in that pool that I blasted so much, Rock?
Well, that was a form of intelligent matter that Stedman perfected. He was a brilliant scientist, but used his knowledge wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The purple ornaments shaped like diamonds were a dried portion of the liquid in the pool.
I see.
He spread them around the hilly area of Polar City, and the farmers on their check of their land would pick them up, fall under an hypnotic spell, and the intelligent matter would lead them to the cave.
What did he do with the people?
Well, only a scientist could explain it, Flaps, but... Well, I'd imagine they were used in some way to feed the pool of intelligence.
Oh, I'm glad we got rid of the thing.
Well, Stedman told me that he planned to rule the universe someday through the pool of intelligence.
Well, how's that deal?
Well, first, he had to scare the farmers away.
Which he was doing a nice job of.
Yeah.
And then, through the food supply, he could control Mars.
Yeah, but what about the rest of the universe?
Well, he'd use his purple ornaments to attract certain powers to Mars. And then, through his control, it would have been an easy matter to use the powers as he wished.
Seth, what are you tapping your head for?
I'm just checking to see if I still have all my brains.
Captain Star of the Space Fleet is based on characters created by Tom Hubbard and written for radio by Tom Hubbard and Fred Eggers. John Larch is heard as Captain Star, Jane Harlan as Gail Archer, and Tom Hubbard as Cadet Sergeant Stripe. Captain Star comes to you transcribed from Hollywood.
Captain Star of Space, on Tuned to Yesterday, an ABC broadcast, heard in 1953. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for X-1, which was NBC's landmark science fiction show, producing about 150 episodes for the network. Only three of those adaptations of Isaac Asimov's stories, like Nightfall and Sea Shoot, and this next broadcast of his story, Hostess, heard on NBC on December 12th, 1956.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, Hostess by Isaac Asimov.
I was so happy about it when I came home, almost triumphant. I dashed in the front door, peeled off my gloves, threw my hat on the side table, and tossed my coat over the back of a chair.
Well, you missed supper.
Drake, we're going to have him here.
Who here? What are you talking about?
The doctor from Hawkins' planet. Didn't you realize that was what today's conference was about?
When you say the doctor from Hawkins' planet, do you mean the Hawkinsite you've got at the Institute?
Well, of course. Who else could I possibly mean?
May I ask what the devil you mean by saying we'll have him here?
Darling, the Hawkinsite would like to stay at a private house somewhere where he won't be bothered with official ceremony, where he'll be able to proceed more according to his own likes and dislikes. I find it quite understandable.
Whenever you start using formal sentences, I know you're hiding extreme irritation.
Well, you don't seem to be trying to hide it at all. Now, what's the matter?
Look, I don't see where we've got room for extraterrestrial visitors.
Are you serious? He can stay in the spare room. Honestly, Drake, all we have to do is show a certain amount of adaptability.
Sure, just a little adaptability. The Hawkinsite breathes cyanide. We'll just adapt ourselves to that, I suppose.
He carries cyanide in a little cylinder. You won't even notice it.
Mm-hmm. And what else is there about them I won't notice?
Nothing else. They're perfectly harmless. They're even vegetarians.
But what about us? Do we eat meat ourselves? Or will that make us look like cannibals to him? I won't live on salads to suit him, I warn you.
Drake, it means very much to me.
Well, why?
Because if he stays here for any length of time, I can study him real closely. Very little work has been done on the biology and psychology of the individual Hawkinsite or of any of the extraterrestrial intelligences. Surely you must see the opportunity. He stays here. We speak to him, watch him, observe his habits.
Look, I've spoken to men who are in charge of security groups watching various Hawkinsite missions on Earth. The missions stay in the rooms assigned to them. They don't leave for anything but the most important official business. They have nothing to do with Earthmen. It's quite obvious that they're as revolted by us as I personally am by them.
Drake, he's a doctor. He's coming here for medical research. And I'll grant you that he probably doesn't enjoy staying with human beings and will probably find us perfectly horrible. But he must stay just the same.
All right. Have it your own way. You sure you don't want any coffee?
No. Drake, you're not angry about this, are you?
No, I'm not angry.
Most of my friends had been surprised when I married Drake because they couldn't understand my marrying a policeman. I explained he wasn't simply a policeman. He was a member of the World Security Board, but most of the staff at the Institute thought it rather odd that I hadn't married a biologist or at least an anthropologist. Even a chemist, but certainly not a policeman. I was waiting for Drake with some apprehension that evening as I sat in the living room. Hark Tolan, the Hawkinsite, was standing quietly in the middle of the room. He was not sitting since he was not anatomically constructed to sit. He stood on two sets of limbs placed close together, while a third pair, entirely different in their construction, were suspended from a region that would have been the upper chest in the human being. His skin was hard, glistening, and ridged, and his face wore a distant resemblance to something alienly bovine.
Mrs. Smollett, you must forgive my English. The construction of my mouth, combined with the absence of incisors and canine teeth, is an obstacle to clear speech.
I think you speak very well.
Thank you.
My husband will be home soon, and then we'll eat.
Your husband?
Well, husband? Yes, you know. Mr. Smollett.
Ah, male. Of course. You must forgive me, Mrs. Smollett. Perhaps the greatest source of confusion among the five known races of the galaxy lies in the differences among them in regard to their sex life and the social institutions that grow around it.
I understand that. The
concept of husband and wife, for instance, exists only on Earth. I can achieve a sort of intellectual understanding of what that means, never an emotional one.
Dr. Tolan, I've consulted the Institute in preparing a menu, and I trust you'll find nothing in it that will upset you. Drake, is that you?
Yeah.
I'm in the living room, dear.
Well, I suppose he's all delivered, complete.
Drake, this is Dr. Hark Tolan of Hawkins Planet. Dr. Tolan, my husband.
Good evening, Dr. Tolan.
Mr. Smollett.
Would you care for a drink?
I'm not particularly thirsty.
On Earth, there's a custom of drinking liquids which have been fortified with ethyl alcohol. We find it stimulating.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid, then, that I must decline. Ethyl alcohol would interfere most unpleasantly with my metabolism.
Well, so it does to Earthmen, too. But I understand, Dr. Tolan. Would you object to my drinking?
Of course not.
Good. I need one. A stiff one.
He stood at the table. I tried not to look at him as he ate. His wide, lipless mouth split his face alarmingly as he ingested food, and in chewing, his large jaws moved from side to side. There was evidence of his ungulate ancestry. found myself wondering whether he would chew his cud later, and then I was afraid that Drake would get the same idea and leave the table in disgust, but he was taking everything quite calmly.
I imagine, Dr. Tolan, that the cylinder at your side holds cyanide.
Quite so.
Pure cyanide?
I hope you are not considering possible danger. I know the gas is highly poisonous to you, and I do not need a great deal. None of it emerges, except when I actually suck at the tube, which is fixed at the corner of my mouth.
I see. And you really must have the gas to live?
Are you not a biologist, Mr. Smollett?
No, Dr. Tolan. Merely a minor government official. My wife's friends call me a policeman. Tell me, what happens if you don't breathe cyanide? Do you just go like that?
Oh, not quite. The absence of it would be equivalent to slow strangulation.
Mm-hmm.
Results are very painful, difficult to treat. I've done some research on the problem.
I find it difficult to keep thinking of you as a doctor.
I understand what you mean. I find it difficult to think of you as a policeman.
I gather that you're not here on a pleasure trip, huh?
No. I intend to study this queer planet you call Earth.
Queer? In what way?
It is always amazing to me to find how little you Earthmen understand your own characteristics. There are 5 intelligent races in the galaxy. Over and over, it is you Earthmen, more than any of the others, who are unique. Your people are the only ones which find hydrogen cyanide poisonous. Yours is the only form of intelligent life which is carnivorous. Yours is the only form of life which has not developed from the grazing animal. And most interesting of all, yours is the only form of intelligent life known which stops growing upon reaching maturity.
Well, you don't look very large, Dr. Tolan. I should say that you're an inch taller than I, which would make you 6'2". Are you young, or are you just small on Hawkins planet?
Neither. We grow at a diminishing rate with the years, so that at my age it would take 15 years to grow an additional inch. But we never entirely stop. And, of course, as a consequence, we never entirely die.
Did you hear that, Rose?
I never knew that before.
You mean people on Hawkins' planet are immortal?
No people are truly immortal. Few of us live more than several centuries of your time. Still, it is unpleasant to think that death may come involuntarily. It is something which to us is extremely horrible.
Oh, we're quite used to it.
You Earthmen live with the thought. We do not. This is why we are disturbed to find that the incidence of inhibition death has been increasing in recent years.
Well, what is this inhibition death?
A pathological cessation of growth. It's a wasting disease. A tragic one. And absolutely incurable. It is fatal within a year.
What causes it?
Mr. Smollett, we know nothing about the cause of the disease.
Well, then why did you come to Earth to study it?
Because, again, Earthmen are unique. They are the only intelligent beings who are immune. The inhibition death affects all other races, while Earthmen are immune. Somewhere in the biochemistry of the Earthite, there is the secret of that immunity. How interesting it would be to find it.
Well, now, look here. You can't say that Earthmen are immune. From where I sit, it looks as if the incidence is 100%. All Earthmen stop growing and all Earthmen die. We've all got the inhibition death.
Earthmen live up to 70 years after the cessation of growth. That is not death as we know it. Your equivalent disease is rather one of unrestrained growth. Cancer, you call it.
Drake was being pleasant to Dr. Tolan. I wasn't sure whether it was for my sake or for his own. Drake has never gone out of his way to please me. Sometimes when I'm gloomy, I look at him across the table and ask myself, why did he marry me? Then suddenly after dinner in the living room, Dr. Tolan asked a question which surprised me.
You are a policeman, Mr. Smollett?
Yes.
I wonder, could you show me through one of the police departments on your planet?
Well, I don't belong to a police department in exactly the way you imagine. However, I have some contacts in the New York City Department.
Would I be able to visit the Missing Persons Bureau?
Why are you interested in Missing Persons Bureau?
Because there again, you are unique. There's no such thing as a missing person on our planet. We're always aware of each other's exact location, no matter where on the planet we might be.
Can you feel such awareness even now, on Earth?
You mean across space? No, I'm afraid not. But you see the importance of the matter. All the uniqueness of Earth should be linked. If the lack of this sense can be explained, perhaps the immunity to inhibition death can be also. Tell me truthfully, Mr. Smollett, if Mrs. Smollett were to leave this room and enter another without your having seen her do so, would you really not be aware of her location?
I really would not.
Amazing. Please do not be offended by the fact that I find it revolting as well.
Drake?
Yes, I'm awake.
Why were you talking about the inhibition death to Dr. Tolan?
I'm taking an interest in your work, Rose. You've always wanted me to take an interest.
I'd rather you weren't sarcastic.
Rose, I'm tired. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
No, right now.
I want no questions from you and no interference. You do your job and I'll do mine.
The nature of my job is open and known.
The nature of my job isn't, by definition, but I'll tell you this. Our six-legged friend is here in this house for some definite reason. You weren't picked as biologist in charge for any random reason. 2 days ago, he'd been inquiring about me at the commission. But that's my job, and I won't discuss it with you any further. Do you understand?
No. But I won't question you if you don't want me to.
All right, and go to sleep.
I lay stiffly on my back, and the minutes passed and the quarter hours. I was trying to fit the pieces together. One picture remained clear in my mind. It hovered over me mockingly. At the end of the evening, the Hawkinsite had turned to me just before he left the room.
Good night, Mrs. Smollett. You're a most charming hostess.
I wanted to giggle then. How could he call me a charming hostess? To him, I must have been a horror, a monstrosity with too few limbs and too narrow a face. But then I saw Drake. He turned white. For one instant, his eyes had burned with something that looked like terror. I'd never before known Drake to show fear of anything. And the picture of that instant of pure panic remained with me until all my thoughts finally sagged into the oblivion of sleep. I remember one question that nagged at me through the haze. Why did he marry me?
I found your missing persons bureau interesting in that the large majority of missing persons are males.
Oh, well, that's not mysterious, Dr. Tolan. You simply didn't realize the economic setup we have on Earth.
My wife is an example of the minority of women who are capable of making their own way in the world.
Would you call the Missing Persons Bureau of New York a fair sampling of such cases in the planet at large?
Well, yes, I should think so.
Is there then an economic explanation for the fact that since interstellar travel has been developed, the percentage of young males among the missing is more pronounced than ever?
Well, that's even less of a mystery than the other. Nowadays, a runaway can hop the nearest space freighter. They're always looking for crewmen. No questions asked.
It's almost always young men. Their first year of marriage?
Well, that's just the time a man's troubles seem the greatest. If he survives the first year, there's usually no need to disappear at all.
Would it offend you if I disconnected for a period of time?
Disconnected?
It's like sleep. Oh. I hope you haven't had too exhausting a day.
It's just that I've been absorbing so many new and unusual concepts that I feel a desire for a little disconnection.
Drake, we've been sitting here for 10 minutes. Aren't you going to speak to me?
About what?
Last night you said you'd speak to me tomorrow. Well, I'm ready now.
I thought it was agreed that you wouldn't question me about my business in this matter.
I think it's too late for that. I know too much about your business by now.
What? What do you mean?
Drake, let go of my arm.
What are you talking about?
Dr. Tolan thinks that Earth is spreading the inhibition death purposely. That's it, isn't it?
Where did you get that idea?
It's true, isn't it?
I want to know exactly why you say that. Don't play games with me, Rose. This is for keeps.
Why don't you ask Dr. Tolan? He's an outstanding worker in the field. I looked over his papers this afternoon.
And what are his theories about the origin of the disease? Try to remember, Rose.
I think he blames Earth, but I think he admits they know nothing about how the disease is spread.
Well, I'll find out about this right now.
Drake, what are you going to do? What's that?
It's my gun. I'm going to ask him a few questions.
He ran out of the bedroom, down the corridor, towards Dr. Tolan's room. I ran after him, caught him just as he entered the door. The Hawkinsite was standing there, motionless, his eyes unfocused, his four standing limbs sprawled out in four directions as far as they would go.
Now keep quiet. He'll gradually become aware of me. Get out of here.
No, Drake. What are you doing?
Quiet. There, you see? The skin on his face is beginning to quiver. Well, that's about all, Dr. Tolan. Don't throw in connection with any of the limbs. Your sense organs and the voice box will be quite enough.
Why do you invade my disconnection chamber? And why are you armed? What do you want?
The answer to certain questions.
With a gun in your hand? Sorry, Mr. Smollett, that the duties toward a guest are so badly understood on Earth.
You're no guest of mine, Dr. Tolan. You entered my home under false pretenses.
You had better shoot. It will save time.
You are convinced that you'll answer no questions? Now, that in itself is suspicious. It seems that you consider certain answers to be more important than your life.
I consider the principle of courtesy to be very important. You as an Earthman may not understand.
Perhaps not. But I can understand one thing. Your cyanide cylinder, suppose I... Pull it out of your mouth. Rose, hold your breath until I close the valve. There. All right, Tolan. You realize what will happen to you if you don't answer the questions I'm going to ask you. Cyanide lack. It would be a most uncomfortable death. I'm only an Earthman. I can't appreciate its true horrors, but you can, can't you?
Drake, give him the cylinder. Give it back to him.
You have about 1 hour, I think, until the effects are irreversible. Talk quickly, Dr. Tolan, and you'll have your cyanide cylinder back.
What are your questions?
What are your theories concerning the inhibition death? Why did you really come to Earth? What is your interest in the Missing Persons Bureau?
For years, I have been investigating the cell structure of my patients suffering from inhibition death. I've been forced to use the utmost secrecy, since the methods I used were frowned on by my people. Your society would have similar feelings against human vivisection, for instance. For this reason, I could not present the results I obtained to my fellow physicians until I had verified my theories here on Earth.
And what are they?
The inhibition death is entirely a disease of the mind.
You mean it's psychosomatic?
No, Mrs. Smollett, it is not psychosomatic. It is a true disease of the mind, a mental infection. My patients had double minds. Beyond and beneath the one that obviously belonged to them, there was evidence of another one, an alien mind. In short, there are not only five intelligences in the galaxy, but six. And the sixth is parasitic.
This is impossible. You must be mistaken, Dr. Tolan.
No, I'm not mistaken. One can imagine such a parasite through the course of millions of years, perhaps losing all portions of its physical being. It would become nothing but pure mind, living in some mental fashion we cannot conceive of on the minds of others, particularly on the minds of Earthmen.
Why particularly Earthmen?
Have you not surmised that the sixth intelligence is a native of Earth? Mankind from the beginning has lived with it, has adapted to it, is unconscious of it. It is why the higher species of terrestrial animals, including man, do not grow after maturity and eventually die. And it is what is called natural death. It is the result of this universal parasitic infestation. where Earthmen could survive the infection for decades with little harm. We others die a quick death, within a year. Give me back my cylinder. You have your answer.
What about the Missing Persons Bureau?
Drake, look at his eyes. Give it back to him.
As we are not well adapted to the intelligence that infests man, neither is it well adapted to us. It can live on us, but it cannot reproduce, with ourselves alone as the source of its life. The inhibition death is therefore not directly contagious among our people.
What are you implying, Dr. Tolan?
The Earthman remains the prime host for the parasite, and an Earthman may infect one of us if he remains among us. But the parasite, once it is located in an intelligence of the outer worlds, must somehow return to an Earthman if it expects to reproduce. We are infected and reinfected as the parasites return to Earth and come back to us via the mind of Earthmen who travel through space.
And the missing persons?
Are the intermediate hosts. The masculine terrestrial mind seems better suited for their purpose. But once reproduction has been taken care of, the infested male leaves by spaceship for the outer worlds. He disappears.
But this is impossible. What you say implies that the parasite mind can control the actions of its host. That can't be, or we would have noticed their presence here on Earth.
The control may be very subtle, and may moreover be exerted only during the period of active reproduction. I simply point to your Missing Persons Bureau. Why do the young men disappear? I'm quite ill now, cyanide lack, and I cannot speak much longer.
And you alone, of all your people, have any knowledge of this theory of yours?
I alone. You will give me back my cyanide cylinder now. I have become quite weak.
Sure. Sure, Dr. Tolan. Rose.
Oh, no!
Rose, come out of here. Come on now. Come on.
He's dead, you shot him.
Outside. Out. Quiet, Rose, quiet. I told you to have nothing to do with this.
Let me go. I want to go away. I want to go away.
Why? Because of something it was my job to do? You heard what that creature was saying. You suppose I could allow him to return to his world and spread those lies? They'd believe him. What do you think would happen then? They would have to kill us all to stop that disease.
What he said wasn't a lie. It was true.
Oh, come on, now you're hysterical. You need sleep.
I know what he said was true because the Security Commission knows all about the same theory and knows it's true.
Why do you say a thing like that?
Because you let it slip yourself.
Now, sit down. Sit down. Well, so I gave myself away, did I? When?
You turned white when Hark Tolan referred to me as a charming hostess. Hostess has a double meaning, Drake. A host is one who harbors a parasite.
Well, I had no idea I was so transparent. Look, Rose, I've done my best to keep you out of this.
The truth can't be held down forever. Somebody else will find out. You can't kill them all.
We know that, too. We have no choice.
Why? Why can't we combine with the other intelligences and wipe out the parasite?
No, you don't understand. Hark Tolan was right. Man and his prehistoric ancestors have been living with this parasitic intelligence for uncounted ages. We've not only become adapted to it, we've become dependent on it. It is no longer a case of parasitism. It's a case of mutual cooperation. You biologists have a name for it.
What are you talking about? Symbiosis?
Yes, exactly. We have a disease of our own, remember? It is a reverse disease, one of unrestrained growth. We've mentioned it already as a contrast to inhibition death. It's all very well to say that if we could remove the parasite, we would have eternal growth in life, but it's impossible for us. If for any reason the parasitic intelligence, as Hark Tolan calls it, does leave the human body, or if its relationship to the human mind is in any way impaired, growth does take place, but not in an orderly fashion. We call the growth cancer, and there you have it. There's no way of getting rid of the parasite. We're together for all eternity. To get rid of their inhibition death, extraterrestrials must first wipe out all vertebrate life on Earth. There is no other solution for them. So we must keep knowledge of it from them. Now do you understand?
he got the body out of the apartment. I sat there numbly. He lied to me. Cancer could not be a disease that was an expression of lost ability for normal growth. Cancer attacked children while they were still growing. It could even attack embryonic tissue. Cancer had nothing to do with the presence or absence of normal growth. Its absence would not cause cancer. Drake lied. But no one would believe me. The young men who disappeared were usually in the first year of their marriage. Whatever the process of reproduction of the parasite intelligence was, it must involve close association with another parasite. The type of close and continuous association, as in the case of newly married couples. The parasite could control actions. I'd report them both, Drake Smollett and Hark Tolan, to the Missing Persons Bureau. But they'd never find them, for they'd be out in space. I wanted to weep, but I couldn't. I was dry-eyed, and it was painful. I'd looked for the answers to so many questions, and I'd found them all. I even found the answer to the question I thought had no bearing on the subject. I finally learned why Drake had married me.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
X-1, pontooned to yesterday from the 12th of December 1956 on NBC. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.